Hello, lovely listeners. I'm your host, Ziva Belil, and I'm thrilled to welcome you back to another delicious episode of On Becoming. This podcast is all about exploring the different journeys that women take in pursuit of self-discovery and self-expression, specifically those courageous moments when we trust our intuition without really knowing where it will lead us. Think of it as unraveling the knotty ball of yarn that is our lives, understanding how each thread weaves into the fabric of who we are. You like my textile metaphors? Well, then you're going to love this episode with the internationally renowned master weaver, Marianne Moody. Marianne Moody is an Australian textile artist and the author of not one, but two best-selling books on the art of weaving. She's also a sought-after teacher who holds sold-out weaving workshops worldwide. Her work has graced the pages of New York Magazine, Milk Decoration, Anthology, O Magazine, and Grazia, and has found its place in the homes of some of the most discerning collectors globally. You can bring her colorful designs, which are inspired by vintage textiles, modern art, and the wonders of the natural world, into your life by visiting her Etsy store or commissioning a custom creation for a truly special occasion, like I did for my 40th birthday almost a decade ago. What truly captivates me about Marianne's journey is how it all started, seemingly by accident. Picture this. Marianne, a teacher, stumbles upon an old loom tucked away in the art supply closet while preparing for maternity leave. She thinks, wow, this would be a cool occupation during my pregnancy and early motherhood. Little does she suspect that her hobby would bloom into a full-time career, riding the wave of a society craving soulful handcrafts made with love and intention. There's so many layers to her beautiful success story, and I'm honored and so grateful that Marianne took the time out of her busy schedule to explore those captivating layers in our conversation today. Get a cup of tea, enjoy this conversation, and let me know what bubbles up for you. Hello, Marianne. Welcome to On Becoming. I'm so excited to have you here today with me. And maybe you can just say hi and tell us where you're calling in from today.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited to be here as well. I'm calling you from Melbourne, Australia, from my home. I've just finished eating dinner with my kids, and they're out there reading Harry Potter with their dad at the moment. So it's evening time here.
It's evening time. Okay. And is this where you are? Is this where you do your art work, or is this a separate place? Is your home studio, is your studio in your home, or is it separate?
Yeah. So I've had a studio outside of the home for probably 9 years out of the sort of 12 or so that I've been weaving. I find that having a space away from the home just sort of gives me that breath in between all of the to-do lists that we have running through our heads and any other, you know, things that are manifesting at home, emotions and roller coasters and school stuff, a little moment in between that and my work, I think.
Yeah.
Also, it started off just that I didn't want my little boys going in and cutting, you know, $1,000 piece off the loom when I was right in the middle of it, which they did a number of times.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah, trial and error, you figured out the recipe that works.
Yes.
Well, thank you for setting the stage. So I just wanted to set the context here for everyone. So, and for you, so this podcast is really about kind of unraveling the weave, so to speak, and shedding light on some of the little moments along the passage that you've taken to become who you are, because I think that sometimes we overlook the wisdom packed into those moments, pivotal shifts, decisions, experiences that really have informed who you've become.
Sure.
Before we begin, is there anything about your journey that you're like, ooh, this is an exciting opportunity to kind of dig a little bit deeper and get some insight over? Is there anything leading up to this conversation that you would like to explore in more depth?
I think you're right. We forget to sort of look back and celebrate, you know, those moments in our lives and to think about how much we've achieved, because we're always looking forward, trying to achieve the next thing or pay the next bill or get something ticked off the list. There's really been so many when I look back of things that have just been, you know, really every day, month, year that I get to weave as a job really is just so surprising. You know, I can't believe that this is my life. It doesn't have to be a big thing like an exhibition or a book it's, you know, the small conversations that I get to have online or in person or at the moment with you, that I get to talk about weaving my passion, and that's my job. So I think it's, you know, the whole ball. I don't think there's, you know, we can get into many specifics, but I think I just really feel super fortunate that I get to do this as a job.
Okay, so every day is a little bit of like pinching yourself and realizing that you've got a cool thing going on.
Yeah.
I remember exactly when I saw your work for the first time, and it was during a holiday winter trip in the south of France. And I was flipping through Milk Decoration, which is a French decorative arts magazine, and there was a whole article about the reemergence of textile art and design and how there was like a renaissance going on. And your work was included among others. And there was just something right away that excited me about your weaves. And I think it was, without sounding reductive, just really cool. Your work just had something fresh and colorful, and the geometry, just everything spoke to me. And several months later, my mom asked me what I wanted for my 40th birthday. And right away, I was like, I'd love a Marianne Moody weave. And I reached out, and that's how we got in contact. And you created a custom design for me that is hanging on my wall. And it makes me so happy every day when I look at it. And we had a really lovely exchange during that process. So I wanted to find out from you, what was happening for you then when you were starting to get some visibility around your work? Here you are, you're featured in a French publication. How long had you been creating textile art at that time? And how did you first start to weave?
So I remember that very clearly. You know, I do make a lot of art, but I always, there's something so personal about being able to create a specific art and tell somebody a story for somebody, and know that it's going to be hanging in their home, hopefully for a very long time. And so I really do make real connections with my collectors, and I really weave in, you know, the emotions and the relationship that we make together, the story that we make together. So I think I was living in New York. I'd moved from Australia to New York, and I had probably would have been a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, Murray. Aaron was working for Etsy. And initially when I left Melbourne, I'd sort of said, well, Aaron, to my husband, you know, you've got this job with Etsy, but I don't really want to move to New York, but I'm taking one for the team because this is what you want to do, not me. And I'm not going to be around my family and my friends when I have this little baby. So just know that, you know, at some point I'm going to want something big that I get to do. Mm-hmm. And it very quickly, you know, I figured out that it was really good for me as well, being over in New York, being an Australian in Brooklyn, getting into textile arts and the Renaissance just as it started to grow. But also I'd already had a little bit of a presence online on Instagram because I used to sell vintage clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a little bit of movement there, and a lot of people moved across because it wasn't too far of a jump between vintage clothes and vintage looking textiles. I think just there was an explosion of sort of online media outlets, mm-hmm. and they were all looking for cool new things on the internet to talk about. And I sort of ticked a lot of boxes, I think, for them. I think that's really how it exploded. And just the amount of people that there are in the US just meant that it happened so quickly, really. I think when I left Melbourne, I thought I had a huge following because I had, I think, 3,000 people, which is, that's a lot of people. But within a year or so, I was up to 25,000 followers. And a lot of those people were just, they were people who liked what I liked. So it just felt like, even though the numbers were huge, I was replying to everybody's comments and making sure that I was part of the community and we were all enjoying this crazy wild time. So that was while I was away from my friends and family in Melbourne. So I was really sort of nurturing this online community, and the fact that it was to do with weaving, which I was really loving, was a bonus.
You were pregnant at the time when you first started weaving?
Yeah, I was pregnant with my first child, and then I had a second child about 4 years into it. And it was just something just for me. When you are pregnant and then you have your baby, you're there like as a servant, a service for this new life.
A conduit.
And so, you know, just sort of coming out of that with one and then moving into it with another one, it felt like this was something that was just, it was sort of fulfilling me in a way that I wasn't getting anywhere else. And the fact that I could also, like, it not just be I'm enjoying this to fill my creative cup or create community connection or to slow down and meditate. All of those things were great. But then I could also make money off it was huge. It meant that now I could do all of those things, but I could also pay my bills. I could pay for the yarn that I was buying obsessively. I could eventually pay for a rent on a studio and somebody to come in part-time and help me sort of pack orders. So it gave me financial freedom as well as creativity connection.
So it sounds like you go there and you first, you don't really have a vision of what you're going to be doing. This creative outlet emerges and you realize that you can actually have a fulfilling career, a profession out of it. And it's not just a pastime. When did you realize that? When did you realize that actually it was something that you could develop into a career?
Ever since I was in primary school, I used to have a bit of a side hustle. So I would make like little toffees and cakes and bring them in and sell them at recess, and always like figured out, oh, well, these ones were really good, so they can be 25 cents and these ones weren't so good, but I'll still sell them. They can be 10 cents. I had this way of figuring out sort of the market, I guess, or being able to do something, and then I'd have a little bit of money so that I could keep doing it. And then a little bit extra. And then in high school, I sort of had my side jobs, but then I quickly started selling vintage clothes. And that taught me a lot about making community, getting customer feedback, just making sure I had a really beautiful product, but also the fulfillment of being able to be creative and find beautiful garments and being able to sort of read the history of them and repair them and sort of pass them along for the new part of their story. So I think that taught me that it taught me a lot about running a business. So I was a teacher for 10 years with that, you know, side hustle. So I knew mostly how to run a business, and I just thought, if I can't figure out how to make this weaving thing work, I can always teach something. So I started teaching weaving because I had a teaching background, and then I could teach and I could also make the artwork. So I started figuring out that there were different streams that I could bring money in, all to do with weaving. So this meant that I enjoyed doing sort of the administrative side and the business side, but then that gave me a freedom to be creative as well.
So you have this intuitive way of kind of being able to gauge what people are responding to and tweak things, and also use your eye and just your natural aesthetics, that what you like and what you think is beautiful, and see how people respond to it. What do you think happen if there's that base that you're then developing as you're starting to weave professionally? What do you think happened to you in your creative identity and your understanding of yourself while you were living abroad? Do you think that that same kind of renaissance would have occurred for you if you were back home? And how much did living abroad contribute to that?
Yeah, I think it was much more intense. After having my children, there was definitely this feeling of moving through the portal, you know, moving through from one part of my life to another, lots of changes. And so you can see sort of this motif of tunnels and bridges and windows in the geometric works, where I'm like weaving the door, but I don't know what's on the other side. And so I think people responded to that, because even if they didn't know that that was actually my intention, there was something there that was real and that they could, I guess, interpret for themselves. So something that felt safe, it felt a bit familiar with the shapes. The weaving was a bit nostalgic, but there was something new with the colors. And so it could help people almost, you know, by exploring my own position, my own emotions, my own journey, and sharing that other people would respond, hopefully, with some sort of an emotional connection.
Were you conscious that you were weaving portals and doorways into your work, or was it on a somewhat of a subconscious level?
It was subconscious, definitely. But there was something there, you know. I had this method of almost trying to put my ego to the side and just draw shapes of things that were around me, you know, drawing miniature versions, turning everything into a geometric shape, turning everything like it's grown in a forest, you know, reinterpreting what was in front of me. And these same shapes and motifs kept coming up. And while I was drawing and while my hands were busy, my feelings were feeling in the background, you know, subconscious was sort of bubbling up. And then as I wove, by the time you've drawn your shapes and sort of getting a little bit of a feeling about what is going on in my subconscious, and then by the time I've finished weaving that piece, I sort of have a better understanding of myself and possibly where I'm going, because I've sort of meditated my way through by feeling the feelings and not looking directly at them.
I'm really into this. So you have like a departure point where you're drawn to some geometric shapes, maybe the environment around you. I mean, it sounds very New York City, like, you know, the geometry of the city, doorways. I'm from Brooklyn, so I'm kind of calling up images that are familiar to me.
Yeah,
but this idea that like, yeah, brownstones, the brick, and everything kind of like the scale, the miniature, you know, a miniaturization of something that's very grand.
Sure.
And so you're processing, as you're weaving, the feelings that are associated with the motifs and the shapes.
Yes.
And somehow things are getting worked out.
Yes.
In the process.
So I'm an optimist by nature. And so any sort of uncomfortable feeling, I push to the side. No, that's not helpful. That's not helpful. And of course, that only works for a certain amount of time and for a certain number of situations. Some things you have to look at and you have to feel and you have to, in order to grow and to move through it. And so these times, having children, early children, living abroad, deciding to move back home, all of those things are uncomfortable feelings. And so weaving really helped me to be able to understand myself better under the full spectrum of human emotions.
Mm. I'm inclined to want to have like a little card next to the work where you talk about what you were going through as you
this wove. Is an angry weave.
Sleepless nights, young motherhood, delirium. Yeah, it reminds me of just, yeah, like having a work of art in an exhibition where you know, there's something about the name of the piece and some little context, a little clue into, you know, what the artist was going through as this was being, you know, birthed, really. I'm reading right now The Creative Act, A Way of Being by Rick Rubin, which I think you would love.
Yeah, well, Aaron's reading it at the moment.
Okay. And there's a quote that he says that the person who makes something today isn't the same person who returns to the work tomorrow.
It's amazing.
So what is that? How does that apply? I mean, you spend time, quite a bit of time on each work. It's not like a little sketch or a watercolor. You can spend, what, weeks, months with a work of art? What happens to you in that process when you come back day to day and you are evolving as a human being, as an artist who is infusing something into your art? What does that look like?
I think sometimes I don't, it's very much, as I was saying before, that it's happening in the subconscious, that I bring things, you know, because I have that partition between my home life and my studio. When I go in there, I'm going in there with the intention of making art. But at the same time, I can't completely shut off the rest of the parts of my life. And so I think while I'm weaving, it's in the flow state, and it's about, you know, over, under, you know, making sure I'm keeping my pattern, wrapping around. It's very much in my body. And it's not until I sort of can step back, I can see a journey of thoughts. I can see a journey of emotions that have happened throughout the piece. I'm also very intentional when I'm creating work for other people that I find out what their story is, where the piece will hang, what do they want this to evoke. So I've had people celebrating a divorce. I've had people rebuilding after a hurricane. I've had these really huge life-changing moments for them, and that this artwork is representing that for them. So it's a marriage between us often that I am trying to make that balance of a story that happens with both of us. It's going to hang on their wall, right? So it's got to be, it does have to have their story, but because it's made by my hands and it's not made by a machine, then it has my story too.
Right. There's something, you know, DNA-esque about this.
And my hair as well. That often gets in there.
It gets caught up in everything too.
Literal DNA.
Right. Literal DNA. Okay. We're getting very meta here. I like it a lot. And also the other dimension, which is the fact that some of the fibers that you choose are also vintage, or that you're very intentional about the actual material that you use. Why is that? What does that contribute as well to this?
I love
genetic,
this question.
You know, interplay.
So I use either secondhand and recycled fibers. I've always been very conscious of being light on the earth, and, you know, being very selective about what I'm choosing to purchase. I buy almost exclusively secondhand clothes and furniture, and even for my boys' books, you know, almost I'd say 90-95% of things are secondhand. And then so what I do buy new, I want it to feel like love. You know, it's come from a very special place. So I've got a lady in Canada, her company is called Roving Fibers, and she creates the most beautiful, you know, dyed fibers, spun. It just feels like a little cloud. It feels so lovely to weave with. And I know that if they've been made with love, and then I get to buy them and I get to use them with love to create. So it sort of, you know, is like an onion of intention and love. Mm. So I want people, if they wanted something, you know, made by a machine, then you could get something from Michaels or IKEA that is fine if that's what you want. But to know that something has been really chosen and curated with intention gives it that extra level of specialness. And people who are buying my work, I want them to open up that artwork and just gasp. I want them to just fall deeply in love with it. And by me making sure that I'm choosing so carefully every little part of it and making sure that it's beautifully made, wrapped beautifully, all of the fibers have been chosen, I think it's got the best chance of being loved and hung on the wall and possibly turned into a family heirloom.
So there's the intention that it is also going to be passed down like a family treasure that you're going to be able to mark future generations.
Because that's what it was in the past. You know, you inherited your grandma's rugs and tables and couches and people don't do that anymore. They want a new season. Oh, it's springtime. Let's get new cushions and bedding. Everything has to be fresh and new. And I just feel like we're losing our stories.
Mm.
All those beautiful things that have been treasured and oiled and taken care of, put in cedar chests, like all of that lineage. And it's really sad.
Well, I mean, it's also interesting. Weaving has been in our lineage in terms of creating things that we would wear, that would decorate our homes. But it seems like there was a disconnect at some point from that, and that maybe weaving is on the rise and the interest is on the rise because it's kind of a reminder of where we come from as a culture. With that in mind, how do you want weaving to help people connect to the past while also being kind of part of the future?
So I think all the things that I have taken from it, it's such a gift. It's passed down through hands. You know, when I first began to look into weaving, I found the loom at my school, and then I found magazines, sort of on 70s style macrame and weaving. And it wasn't really on the internet anywhere, which I kind of liked. I liked that it wasn't easy, that I had to really search it out. And I borrowed some books from the library, and it was really trial and error. And it was something that I couldn't do while I was watching TV. I had to really focus with my mind and with my hands. So it really took all of my focus to, especially at the beginning, but even now. But I had found this page on the internet, and it was a static page that said, "Learn to weave. Do you want to learn to weave?" And there was no links or anything, and it had an email address, and I emailed and I said, "Yes, I want to learn to weave. I can't find anything." And this boy, he was a teenage boy who had set up the page for his grandma and her weaving group in Southern California, and they wanted to teach other people how to weave. So for his school project, I think it was, he set up this landing page for them. I contacted him. He passed my details along to their group, and they sent me in the mail like parcels with some churro wool and some tools and books and handwritten letters. And it was just so, like, it was a literal gift that they were giving me of weaving when I couldn't find the information anywhere. And they were saying, "These are the terminology to be looking for. This is this style weaving. This is this style loom." And it made me want to teach again the way that they loved weaving so much. And I can imagine it almost like, you know, the women's circle that traditionally you would have had your grandma or your auntie teaching the next generation and then passing it along to the next generation and keeping those skills going. And we've lost that. We've lost our connection to family. We've lost our connection to community. We've lost our connection to our hands and skills. Everything is just easy, quick, find it on the internet. We don't need to talk to anybody. I want to order it on my phone and then I'm going to get the post person to drop it at my front door and I'm not even going to open the door. Like all of this, we've gone so mm-hmm. far in that direction. And I think some people, well, yeah, I think some people are scared and they can see that this is not a path that they necessarily want to be down. And so by grabbing things back slowly, eking things back into making connections with, you know, older generations, making connections with our community, finding time to use our hands and our creativity. I think those things like ceramics, woodworking, people sewing mm-hmm. their own clothes, like even though it's on the internet, I see these crafts coming back and I see communities starting to come back as well. People sharing for no other reason than the joy of creating and sharing this information and keeping it alive.
It makes me think of what happens when people come together to share skills and experience, like quilting circles, you know, communities of women who span generations and spend an epic amount of time constructing something together. And just thinking about what are the stories, what are the details of everyone's life that also then get shared?
The wisdom.
Because that, the wisdom, right. The wisdom of, you know, women's circles where there's maybe the intention of building, creating something together for the community or for someone's home or to celebrate a birth or a marriage. But then there's also these other layers of what we gain from coming together and just chit-chatting about stuff. And that's something that I think that we're all, you know, in danger of missing out on, and how we have to desperately kind of fill the gaps in our own little bubbles. I know that you bring women together and the courses that you do. And so it's kind of like an extension of that tradition. Someone wrote like a little testimonial about her experience at one of your workshops. And she said that she was at a turning point in her career and being able to use her hands and create something was actually very helpful in allowing her to kind of map the next chapter. I wonder how you see that when you bring women together for your workshops, and what are some of the conversations or maybe some of the challenges that women are going through when they decide to enroll in a workshop that's going to give them a new skill, but potentially help them process other things that they're going through.
I think a lot of people come to weaving or a craft or a new skill often at a crossroads or at a crisis or a moment of growth, a moment of change. They're searching for something like an answer. Basically, what it comes down to is I want something to do with my hands that allows my mind to be free. And during that time, while my mind is in flow or free, hopefully I'll start to make connections about what the next thing is. So I was talking about that earlier, that sometimes I don't even know what the answer is or what the weave is about while I'm actually in the moment. But then I can step back and have a little perspective and say, oh, yeah, that looks like a jail. Maybe I'm feeling trapped. For example.
What to be done?
But it's, I think having a room full of women, and it is, I mean, I think I've had 3 men in 12 years of teaching. So they are there, but it is rare. But you get just this safe space. They turn their phones off. They've organized, you know, either a babysitter or a dog sitter or some time off from work to have 3 hours to be in this space, and they land in the space. And I talk about, you know, give yourself some time. You're here to learn, but you're also here to make connections. You know, we're going to have some fun. I'm very open and transparent about everything. So straight away, I try to put them at ease and try to make them feel comfortable in my class. I encourage people to help each other as well. And they start to sort of make these little connections. And then somebody might say, oh, I used to work in, you know, disability advocacy, or, you know, they start to make these little connections around the table. And by the end of the class, they walk away with, you know, something that they've actually made, which some of them have never made anything with their hands. And so just the thrill of being able to walk away with, oh my God, I made this. It's so cool. But then also, you know, they come away with having had a community connection. Yeah. When I was in New York, I used to have a monthly meetup at a pub, and we would just say, it's going to be at this pub in the beer garden, hopefully if it's nice. And there might be 2 people, or there might be 13 people, or there might be 30 people. And so we would just meet up and have a glass of wine or 2 or 3 and chat and share information. And yeah, and the conversations as people would walk past, what is going on? What is that? Oh, I remember that. Yeah, my nana used to do, you know, all of those sorts of things. I can't remember what the question was, Ziva.
It's okay. I like where we wound up. Well, I mean, this makes me excited because, well, I can see, totally see, like, especially in New York, people being very curious and chatty, be like, oh, what are you up to? And that's also woven into the experience for everyone. I saw online, I hope this isn't too like personal, but my antenna is very sharpened right now to menopause, perimenopause, and that chapter of life. And I saw that you shared that. I don't know. It's just a curious thing. What I also love is that you share your work, but you share a lot about yourself and the highs and lows of being an entrepreneur, of having your own business. You've been talking about some of the changes that you're realizing that are going on in your body too, and making connections between the physical, the emotional, the, you know, spatial. And I'm curious to know, what are you arriving at, please, you know, for, you know, asking for a friend about that, and how the emotional, physical shifts that happen at this, you know, at this phase of a woman's life, how are you processing that through your work?
So I think I'm very lucky that I have a good friend who she's 52. So I'm 46, and she's very much into age advocacy and awareness and sort of really making sure that she's not shying away from growing older. And so to have her as my role model has been incredible. Started going through menopause probably about 5 years ago, and she did a lot of research to do with hormone replacement therapy. And she would send any articles or podcasts or people to follow on social media. She would share it with our little group and just say, it took her a long time of going down rabbit holes and the wrong way and being told she couldn't do this or she shouldn't do this, to arrive in a place where she felt like she had achieved something closer to her real self. And so she didn't want us to waste as much time as she had wasted, and so wanted to give us as much resources and information as possible before we arrived at feeling any sort of confusion or powerlessness, I think. For a long time, people just didn't like the focus is so much on puberty and the beginning of the reproductive cycle, and really nothing on menopause, which is, you know, the other end of puberty. It's the closing down of that part. And so we've probably, you know, all watched our mums, you know, if we're lucky enough to have a mum in your life and at that time when she went through menopause, but we've probably seen some women go through it and not really only sort of hear the negatives, you know, or in comedy on TV, oh, I've got hot flashes and sort of, it doesn't really talk with any, I guess, honesty, but curiosity really, mm-hmm. about this time that every single woman goes through, you know, if she's, lucky enough.
Yeah,
yeah, if she's lucky enough to sort of get to that age. And so I think by having, like, quote unquote, normal people like me being, if you're interested in what I have to say and what I have to offer in terms of, you know, what I have in my art practice, then there's this other stuff that I'm also interested in. I'm interested in dancing. I'm interested in fashion. And so I really like to give a holistic picture. I don't want it to just be this pretty perfect picture of my art, mm-hmm. and all the rest of it is deleted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like I can make a much deeper connection with people by showing more of what I have to say and more of what I have to think, because maybe somebody out there might think, huh, yeah, me too. And it might make them feel a little better about themselves, a little less lonely, a little less out of control. So I think that's my intention, that as things happen, I just want to put it out there and hopefully make a connection with somebody and make them feel a little less alone in the world.
Well, I mean, it makes me think about what you were saying earlier with the vintage, just kind of responding, being authentic and being authentic about where you are and what you're drawn to. And even you'll find the people will be drawn to you and you'll be drawn to them because there are common connections and interests. And I think it is important to know, you know, who's making the art, what she's experiencing, and how that's woven in, even if it's maybe not obvious to the eye that there is some kind of experience going on behind the scenes.
And some people might enjoy that. Some people might enjoy just the picture, just the just the photo, just the woven artwork. But other people want to go deeper. They want to know the story mm-hmm. behind it. They want to know the feelings behind it.
Well, I mean, in your work, there is something very, cyclical. There are waves, there are ebbs and flows, there are bumps and ridges, there are passages that are smooth and others that are kind of agitated. I think that's one of the things I've always loved about what you put out there, is that there's something very organic about it. It seems like it's a reflection of the body, nature. It's not clinical. There's something very warm and evocative about it. So I'm looking to, you know, I'm like, well, okay, so is this a moment of flux and change? And how is that coming out in some of the things that you want to express?
Right. Oh, right now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely changes. I think the last big shift was when I turned 40, and that was I moved back, like was moving back from the US, turned 40, and it just felt that like there were huge changes. And I think I'm never somebody who's had a 5-year plan or a 1-year plan or a no plan. There's no plan. I think, and I've always thrived on that, just the idea that I am so open. Like I'm an open body, an open organism that is open, listening, looking, feeling, tasting, smelling, always to figure out what's the next thing for me, where, you know, figuring out the path, the journey. And I think that's what it is, that during these moments of big change, when I start to feel like something is moving or shifting or coming, then it's time for me to open myself up again and really be ready for noticing small opportunities or big opportunities
mm-hmm.
that could take me down a path that I wasn't expecting.
Mm. So do you have like a side routine that helps you be able to sense when those shifts are kind of emerging?
I guess it's really intuition, a lot of it. When I start to notice things slow down or in a certain area that was previously moving and flowing, like an energy that has sort of blocked almost.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I'll notice that that part of my business or that part of my life is not moving the way that it was before. And so is it time to let that go? Is it time to move? So I've just moved from my studio that I was in for 6 years, and it was, you know, this beautiful, huge space, but I had taken it on thinking that I was going to be teaching more classes in there, and that didn't really work out the way that I had thought that I was going to be doing it. And so I thought, and it was very expensive as well. It was $2,000 a month. And for an artist, that's, well, for anybody, that's a mortgage.
Right.
And really, that would be nice to be spending on an actual mortgage instead of rent on a studio. And so I decided to downsize.
Okay.
Which felt like, is this right? I don't know, questioning myself. I don't, you know, I've been in that comfortable space for so long that I wasn't sure about whether it was the right thing to do. And we also, my two boys changed schools. They've been at the same school for, well, since we moved back from the US. So they've changed primary schools. So we've had a few changes in, like, in my family life and in my work life. And I think now it's just a matter of sort of holding on for a little bit and being aware, being open and seeing what's next. I'm not somebody who likes to move too quickly. So it's sort of, it takes me a while to make those big decisions. And then once I've made them, I sort of, I like to just hunker down for a little bit and just assess the situation. So I'm in a bit of an assessment period right now. And I'm doing lots of drawing in my sketchbooks.
Oh. Well, I love that. Well, thank you for sharing your process. It's something that as a coach, I hear all the time about how do you know what's right? How can I discern what is the next step, the next turn off the roundabout that makes sense for me? And everyone has their own set of tools, but this notion of being aware of when things are slowing down or when there's some kind of block or like an energy reached its capacity, to just be conscious of it and maybe not force filling up the cup again in a spot where the cycle is complete.
Right.
So thanks for sharing that. I'm going to take note of that. So I know that you were, have you come back from Morocco or you're going to Morocco? Where can people work with you if they want to meet you and be part of one of your workshops? Is that a possibility? How do you prefer people to reach out and collaborate with you right now?
Yeah, so I'll be going to Morocco in a week and a half, and that's with Ace Camps Tours, who I have toured with before. We went to Scotland at the end of last year and Laos a couple of years ago, which I really love. I mean, God, what a pinch me moment. It sold out in less than 5 minutes, I think. It's pretty exciting to be able to teach in something like that. But I think I've just been talking to my husband about a new idea for mentor sessions. So have somebody be able to email me and either pick a half an hour session, an hour session, or a 2 hour session, and that I can either teach them right from the beginning and take them through a full piece online, or I can have a talk to them about their weaving practice, how to get more creativity. I could talk to them about troubleshooting things that they're having problems with when they're already weaving, business advice about how to promote or social media. So rather than having, you know, 10, 20 people in the one class all weaving the same piece, which I do love doing, actually being able to offer more, something more globally, because I'm in Australia, so not everybody is able to come to my in-person classes. And I've got online classes as well, and I've got my books. But I just think that we were talking about it last night, actually. So it's just, this is very
fresh.
New.
Yeah.
Very fresh. And it would be a way to connect with people all over the world and just come in where they want me, you know, to offer.
Well, I even think that there would be some interest around what we were talking about with, you know, helping people process energy blocks and, you know, stagnant phases of their life, or maybe thinking about going through those, how to get through those tricky transitions and what the, you know, the process of weaving allows you to identify.
Like art therapy.
Art therapy. Yeah. So to wrap things up, for this journey of this conversation right now, what have you latched onto as something that you're discovering in yourself that you're becoming more of?
I think I've just become more centered in myself and knowing myself more. I think for a long time I was a people pleaser, and just I got my energy and positivity from seeing the way that I was able to make other people happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the years I have learned how to make myself happy. I think, you know, that whole idea of like put your own mask on before you help others has actually, it seems crazy at the time, because if you're a people pleaser, you're like, no, I need to help them so that they like me before I put my own mask on. But the more that you nurture yourself and take time out for myself, the more I like myself, and then hence the more likable I feel, because I've sort of fallen in love with myself.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful. Oh, well, thank you so much, Marianne, for joining me today. This has been a real, real special treat.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to share this story with everyone and to link up to all the different ways that people can find you, and especially your cute little Instagram videos where you dance around in cool leggings and in front of beautiful artwork. It's very lovely to have that burst of joy and authenticity.
Oh,
so thank you for being you, and to be continued another time. I am so appreciative of having your time and your attention, and would love to hear anything you have to say, any feedback, any questions, any requests. You can leave me a voice message if you go to speakpipe.com/onbecoming. That's speakpipe, speakpipe.com/onbecoming. I promise to get back to you. If this podcast has touched you, inspired you, transformed you in any way, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast listening platform.